Here we are with Don't Split the Party and this week's podcast. I'm here with my son, Jay.
Hello.
My son, S.
Sup.
And my son, N.
Hi.
And today we're talking about?
Hirelings.
Hirelings. Hello. Okay. N, what's your opinion on hirelings?
I think that at a certain point they are necessary, because are you really going to be hauling all that Zagans as it by yourself?
Good point. There's a lot of encumbrance. You need extra people.
And think of all the advantages they give you. A gem cutter can flat out increase the value of the treasure you find. An armorer means that you can repair your armor in the field, which is great if the game masters ever followed the actual rules of the Black Pudding.
Well, exactly, because the Black Pudding, what's it do?
It corrodes your armor. Yeah. And your weapons.
And your weapons. So in addition to an armor, you might want a...
Weaponsmith.
A weaponsmith or a blacksmith, right.
Yeah.
And what do you think the most useful non-skilled hirelings would be?
Do mercenaries kind of skilled?
Because mercenaries are skilled. Yeah. Mercenaries are skilled. I think the valet is terribly underappreciated. For example, what are the rules on donning armor? It takes time, right?
Especially, a lot of time.
Especially using like the Wilderness Survival Guide or the Dungeoneer Survival Guide. It takes time to put your armor on, but it's faster with help. So if the party's attacked in the middle of the night and everyone's running around, having a valet is the difference between life and death. Right.
Especially with that orc with the two-handed sword of swords in your way.
Exactly.
It's definitely worth 3 silver pieces a day. 4 if you can go out in the wilderness.
I'm about to say, exactly.
3 silver pieces a month.
Yeah. Exactly. It's not that expensive. And porters, these are guys that schlep things for you.
The Eastkin is able to carry 50 pounds individually, 500 gold pieces, and they only cost a silver piece a day.
So if you're going out on a big treasure haul, even if they don't go into the dungeon with you, and that's a big debate, do hirelings go into the dungeon with you? I don't think it really matters. If they're staying in camp, you hire some mercenaries to guard the camp. You have valets there. You're going to have somebody in charge. But who do we have in charge of your hirelings?
Your henchmen.
Your henchmen. Mm-hmm. Your henchmen.
Your squustworthy henchmen. Not the
untrusty half-orc fighter assassin.
Right.
Remember, what was it? Robert Plamondon back in Dragon 45, and the article, How to Have a Good Time Being Evil. His first bit of advice was, the night after the big haul, don't leave the assassin on guard.
Yep.
Right. And that leads us to another thing. I've got a couple custom NPC hirelings in Far Realms that's coming out, one of which is the healer.
It should have existed all along. And I'm saying this honestly. It's not a marketing snub. I really want a healer.
But everyone wants a healer because the healer is designed so that it aids in how fast you heal naturally from wounds. And they give you a chance at another saving throw versus poison. And they can even nurse you, quote-unquote, back to health from level drain over a long period of time.
Which is something that needs to exist. Because precision level
drain is brutal.
Level drain is brutal. They're pretty common. And the healers don't have a guaranteed shot at it, even a really good one.
But it's better than nothing.
It's better than nothing, and it explains how the common man can live through a world where you never know when something's going to pop out and drain a level on.
Like that random ghoul decides to paralyze someone.
Exactly. A ghoul can paralyze someone, can fix that, and having a healer along is going to help out because a healer in the party reduces your odds of contracting disease or parasites.
And can heal you from disease inflicted by monsters, such as the giant rat or the otyug.
Exactly. And then the merchant, which was already mentioned, the merchant's, his sort of quote-unquote thing is if you've got a merchant with the party and he's getting paid, he reduces how much it costs to buy things and increases the resale value of stuff. I don't know if everyone does this, but I've always said I've got it written down what something is valued as, and then the guys have to negotiate to get what they can get for it.
Which is how Gigas wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's how Gary wanted it. You don't say this is a gem worth 1,000 gold pieces. You say that's a mighty big pearl. And then through haggling this, that, the other, get the other things. But you mentioned a jeweler can actually improve the value of the treasure that you find.
Which is...
That's crazy talk.
Yes. Especially Zemgut is, because they can do it. They're quicker than Zulus, but...
But they have a chance of ruining your treasure if they're lame, which is why you should invest in a gnome.
Invest in a gnome, exactly.
Don't add 30% to their skill. There's no such thing as a poor gnome gem cutter.
So if you can find a gnome gem cutter and convince him to come to your party, even if it only is one gem out of every 100 that you find, he's going to pay for himself rapidly. So why not have one at least back at home?
It's 100 gold pieces a month, though. Actually, 200 because gnome.
But still, okay.
So really what you want to do is get all your gems together and then ship them off to the one-month contract with your gem cutter.
Right, or have them on retainer, etc. How much gems do you handle? But these are still good ideas. Link boys, I don't know how many times back in the day I went to a dungeon and we would hire link boys. If you guys recall, when we first started the second edition campaign, the Blackstone campaign, what was basically the first thing you guys did? Recruited some halflings from the nearby village to come with you, and they were specifically there to carry torches.
Well, they made a good showing, as I recall. We're getting a few crazy rolls and killing like a giant spider or something.
Right, they saved one of you guys from a giant spider by getting him one guy leveled up, and then, of course, I think they all died from plague and... Oh, that's right, one did live. One's still around. He returned home on a pension. That's right. So...
They had 100 gold piece pension.
Well, think of it, but let's think about that, too. These guys added a lot of role-playing opportunities to the adventure. You had a group of henchmen sitting around at your tower, and the tower was basically a brownstone in the city. Cooking, cleaning, guarding, this, that, the other. When you had that were-rat attack, they were indispensable, letting you know where the rats are coming through. So...
I still hate you for that were-rat attack.
You're more than welcome. The were-rat attack was a great deal of fun, yes.
Mercenaries are also awesome.
Mercenaries are awesome.
Hit dice were-rat with the dueling Morin stars, by the way.
I forgot that guy. But yeah, after looking at the rule books again recently, I think that mercenaries are definitely a great idea for any adventuring party.
Why?
Because they're just incredibly useful in combat and out of combat. I mean, who hasn't wanted to bring six Slayers along and provide fire support inside the dungeon or in an outdoor adventure? And heck, as I recall, it is explicitly mentioned in the memoirs that Robillard himself hired mercenaries and was part of the genesis of those rules.
Exactly, because Robillard had an entourage, yes?
Everyone ever wanted 40 pikemen?
Yeah, some pikemen along, but if nothing else, maybe you have to pay him double or triple to go in the dungeon, but heck, a couple heavy footmen just to watch the back.
Yeah.
Or the camp.
Or the camp.
Remember that time you killed all our horses and stole all our stuff when a wild could destroy our camp?
Well, I remember that, but I also remember that you guys, if you don't leave a guard behind, I check for random encounters, and at least once an orc just came along and took your horses. You know, it happens.
Yeah.
So having guards in camp is valuable. Even if they just keep you from having your horse stolen, that's paying for the mercenaries for several months.
Although you better hope they're pretty high morale guards, because otherwise they might be the person stealing.
Which brings us to another thing. Hirelings are great, but they don't always work to the party's advantage.
Right.
They can be a source of
adventurers
and spur of the moment improvisation when they get roll minimum on their morale check and run off with all your loot, or turn against you, or join your secretly lawful evil henchmen in a revolution.
Well, I've actually told on the blog the story of Starbinder and a party, where Starbinder used a combination of hold person, forget, and charm person to basically maintain a running charm on a member, one of the hirelings in the party. So the hireling kept giving, I know this guy, he's really trustworthy, and basically worked a villain into the party where he was well known and vouched for, and eventually just robbed them blind several times. So you have to watch out for that. But then you have henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the henchmen are much more loyal, they cost a lot more. They're a lot more loyal. They're harder to find.
And when they fail their loyalty, they fail their loyalty hard. So don't skimp on the lawful good role playing.
Right. Do the lawful good role playing, and also, what's another great way of avoiding the bad role? Money.
Yeah.
Right. Good loot.
Bribery is an essential part of first edition.
Bribery is well said. Bribery is a core part of first edition, especially when it comes to your henchmen. One thing that I always role-played was we negotiate, and they got a half share of the treasure with no magic items. And then when one of the henchmen did something good on the table, like, they got a natural 20, they saved the guy, we'd say, okay, you're taking one of my character's magic rolls. You can get a magic item this time. Those sorts of things. And that can add a lot of role-playing. And one thing that I've actually, again, mentioned on the blog before is, if you haven't thought of it yet, consider every now and then having the party just say, okay, you're playing a henchman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even better, you're playing somebody else's henchman.
Oh ho!
Right, because that can give you you're not going to abuse a guy or disrespect a guy when you might end up playing him next time. One of my favorite all-time characters in my career was Bornthein de Selby, who started off as a halfling rescued from a fighting pit being run by gnolls by one of my paladins, and did the whole "I'll serve you for a year and a day for saving my life" turned into a henchman. And then eventually the game master said, well, tonight you're playing Bornthein because he's the only guy that makes sense. And I've been playing him for 28 years now. A straight, max level, 17 strength, halfling fighter with gauntlets of ogre power.
Sounds awesome.
Other than hilarity.
hilarity. When a halfling can knock your block off. All right, so, yes.
Sazes.
What's that?
Sages.
Oh, sages could be its own podcast. Holy moly, sages are fascinating. It's actually fairly well documented in the books that there's Gary expected you to not be able to do a ton of things without talking to sages. Sometimes a very particular sage.
Sages are indeed very, very critical of the game. They've got several odd things about them.
Such as, my personal favorite is, they can cast spells.
But they, in a way that's almost completely different from everyone else.
Exactly.
They get up to a very high level, but they get almost no spells per day, and they don't actually keep spell books so much as spell libraries.
Right, they're going to have access to a massive library, but at the same time, they might have one first-level spell, a third-level spell, and an eighth-level spell, and that's what they can cast, kinda. And that's it. And it's based upon what they know. Like, you have a guy with a sage knowledge of the elemental plane of Earth who can cast Earthquake.
Yeah.
Right?
Bam.
Wow, that's weird.
Terrifying.
Terrifying, and like you said, you can't, well, I'm going to loot it, and where does he learn the spell? Well, you have to learn 14 ancient languages, and then read all these 50 books, and then memorize this table, and then maybe you can do it. But it points out that there's actually non-Vancian spellcasting of a sort, at least non-standard spellcasting, right there in the DMG, because sages can do it.
And also, I was really annoyed when you gave us an amulet of the planes with no notes on it.
Listen, so you gotta find
the
sage. You gotta
listen,
go to the sage.
The sage is in like, yeah, another way.
Nice. All I know is maybe we might go to the seven heavens, or we might go to the nine, or we might go to hell. I don't know.
With supernatural and unusual as one of his fields.
Right, you gotta find a guy with supernatural and unusual, or the planes, or magic items, and then the sage is a great way to use magic items to drive adventures. Well, that sage lives in the lost tower of the mad archmage in the midst of the vast swamp. Why? Well, there's a library there, and why move it? So you
get
an adventure
that,
there.
It's another way to suck money out of the player's pockets. But in a way that they'll actually enjoy, so it doesn't feel like you're robbing them. It feels like you're helping them.
Like you're a genius.
Well, face it, one of the most important things that for me to do as a game master is to make sure that you guys are leveling up at something approaching a respectable rate. And if you're doing the first edition rules the way they're meant to be, that means you got to make money. So the other part of that, sort of responsibility on my part, is to vacuum those coins right back out of your belt pouches, right?
Because otherwise we'll end up sitting on 500,000 gold pieces for no clear reason.
Right, if you, not only that, but why would you adventure? If you got 600 pounds of gold, why would you adventure? Yes, and
I think we're drifting into another podcast here.
Oh, we are doing
of
another
podcast. Of course
podcast.
We are.
We absolutely are. So
my favorite is you can end up with an insane chaotic missile says with a full charisma.
Well, yeah, that's fascinating. And how do you convince this guy to tell you what you want? Well, I need the command word to this staff of power, because it won't work without the command words. Well, you have to bring me a shrubbery. I mean, that sounds very much like a quest.
And if I was me, I would roll on the higher-end personality sort for the saves.
Yeah, go
well, absolutely.
Because he might be the insane hermit saves, who's just sitting in a swamp realizing, hey, I have a massive mind rivalry. Time to sit here and tell adventurers crazy stories.
Exactly. Maybe that's doing it. As a matter of fact, let's talk about another thing. When we did the hirelings, you guys got some henchmen in hirelings not too long ago. And what was the result? There was a particular halfling I'm trying to remember. I used the random rolls to make a personality. And it actually made sense. So I wrote them up. And my oldest son got a henchman who looked great on paper, very friendly guy, but it turned out that he was
a Witch King infiltrator.
He was actually an agent for the horribly, horribly evil, lawful evil, undying Witch King of Zanzara. So
fortunately, I was disappointed when he was killed by a plant at the very first adventure.
Albert.
That was a plant.
It was an
Albert. No, actually, that's right. He killed the plant. The Albert killed him. On the very first adventure I brought him on.
Second adventure you bought him on.
And then only learned all this from his
Glibbles.
Notes.
Right, and he had notes. He had his report to his superiors about the activities of the party. So it's about time for us to wrap this sucker up. It's been a while today. Again, I'm going to be adding a contact page to Don't Split the Party. So if you have any suggestions for future podcasts, look for that and be ready to send us ideas. Thanks from all of us here. Bye-bye.